The first one is Rob H. Rob H. got clean of Connecticut in July of 1981. Rob was the co-chair for the first H&I meeting in the state, located at Whaley Avenue Jail. Rob was also part of the oldest running meeting in Connecticut, and that was at Orange and Wall. Our next panel member is Juliette O. She got clean in Connecticut in January 18, 1983, with seven meetings in the whole state, and two of them being H&I meetings. Juliette helped serve the women's prison in Niantic. She also was the chairperson for H&I in the entire state. All right. Jimmy C. got clean May 20th, 1985. His home group is Straight Ahead. He got clean during the Reed adjustments time in Connecticut when the area turned into a region. Jimmy is our regional H&I delegate. He also used to be the liaison to the jails. Jimmy finally got the co-chair regional delegate, and he's our delegate.
Very confusing.
My name's Rob. I'm an addict. Really nice to be here. As Danny S. would say, it's nice to be here. Just share my memories, and lately my memories are—I'll tell you—but my earliest memories of coming into Narcotics Anonymous, and many of us, all of us back then, came in through the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'll be forever grateful for those folks that didn't really understand my addiction and what I was going through, but. Just devoted their time and their effort just trying to help me get well. And some of the stories I have about, because I could not get clean there. And I don't think it was because of that program. It was because of my illness and how sick I was. And I was in and out, time and time again. And it was this old guy that used to try to help me Mel, and I would use, and I'd come in and I'd start talking about shooting drugs, you know, taking methadone and stuff like that, and they would just shake their heads and sort of look at me, and I said, I used again, I start crying, and Mel would say, listen, Rob, get up there, have a cup of coffee, keep your mouth shut, have some cookies, some nice cookies over there, and just keep your mouth shut. And I do that, and then about a week later, I come back, I used again. It's okay, Rob. There's some nice cookies over there. Coffee. Just sit up and keep your mouth shut tonight. Okay. About a week later, I say, I used again. Okay, Rob. Cookies. After the meeting, he was standing there with a couple other guys in AA, and they said, man, I don't know why you waste your time with that kid. He ain't never going to get it. He goes, well, you know, God spoke first, and you know what? He's fun to practice on. In 1981, my first sponsor Big Mac, Lord have mercy on him. He passed away from kidney disease about 15 years ago. And I had been struggling, as I mentioned, and he said, you know, I heard about this new program. They started it. There's two meetings now. He didn't know about the two institutional meetings down at Westport. He said, there's one in Hartford and there's one in New Haven. He said, they got one in Hartford on Tuesday night. He said, I'm going to take you over there and introduce you to some people. And he took me into the first meeting, and the guy, Phil H., who also passed away, seems like everybody passed away, met me at the door, and Phil didn't like the hug either, but he gave me a hug, and it was like, you know, it wasn't none of this shaking your hands. And I remember feeling really strange having this guy hug me. And Sonny T., who also is no longer with us, was chairing the meeting. And I just moved out of Sonny's house into this meeting on South Whitney in Hartford. And I remember sitting there and them talking about stuff, and I felt very, very uncomfortable. And it was like May of 1981, I'm sorry. And I left the meeting, and I told my sponsor, I said, man, I don't like that. I don't like, you know, it just didn't feel right. They wanted to hug me, you know, it just felt. And he said, yeah, well, you know, just stick with this AA, and you'll be all right. And I used again in July. And then I had gotten clean in July. And in November, I heard about a meeting in New Haven. And I grew up in Meriden. I was living in Meriden, Connecticut. And once again, my sponsor said, man, I think you ought to try this other meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. It's in New Haven. It's on Orange and Wall. It's up in a little room off this church. And I remember going in there, and there's this guy that met me at the door. He had a Panama hat on. He had a long ponytail. His name was Danny Sullivan. Danny also is no longer with us. He died over 25 years ago or something. How long, Eddie? How long?
24 years
ago. He passed away. Danny met me at the door, and he said, you must be Rob. I said, oh, you've heard of me. And he said, yes, I have. And there was about maybe 20, 25 guys in the room, guys and girls. There was people from Hartford that I had met in May that were there, and there were the guys from New Haven. And that was it. There was maybe 25, 30, maybe a few more addicts. At this time, I was clean about 5 months. And I remember sitting there at Phil H. And they talk about our identification as addicts. And as I mentioned, I loved the other fellowship, and they basically saved my life. But I really didn't identify with a lot that was going on there. And but I did really value their warmth and their love of me. So I was sitting in a meeting, and Phil started sharing. And back then, there wasn't a hell of a lot of spirituality. You know, the meeting sort of consisted of, can you top this? You know, and Phil talked, and he was sitting there, and he said, I spent half of my life in a bathroom waiting for that fine red line. And my gut just flipped. And I said, this is where I need to be. And that's how my experience started in NA. I loved it. I loved it then, and I love it now. It was very, very excited. On Thursday night, all of us would meet in New Haven. On Tuesday night, we'd get in the car, and we'd go up to Hartford to their meeting. And it was like a band of brothers. And we used to go, Danny and I and a few other guys, we'd go around to these treatment centers where they'd have open meetings in the treatment centers. And we would recruit, you know. Somebody identified themselves as an addict and an alcoholic. After the meeting, we'd say, man, you don't need to be here. You got to follow us. Thursday night, Orange and Wall. You're an addict, man. You know, you're just hiding out in this other fellow. And that's what we used to do. We used to go in and we used to recruit them. Some of us used to go into bars, not me personally, and try to find our old friends. But we believed. We believed that we were clean for the first times in our lives, and that, and me personally, I knew it wasn't me that was doing it. That there was something happening in Narcotics Anonymous. There was a God that was expressing Himself through other addicts, and we wanted to share that with other people. I see some of that today too. I'm still pretty much involved in NA. But back then, we would not, Bobby talked about it last night, we would not let the newcomer go. They stayed at our houses. You know, we'd take them to meetings. We would call them up. We wouldn't, none of this, you know, give me a call. If they didn't call us, we would call them and pick them up. And that was a joy for us. And that was a joy for the people that wanted to help other people get clean. I know that I once heard in a meeting saying, you know, that the takers eat well and the givers sleep well. And my first sponsor said, kid, you want to be a giver. You know, you want to be happy, joyous, and free. He said, you got to try to help other addicts. And I'll never be able to give back to Narcotics Anonymous what it has given to me. Some of the people that most were instrumental in my personal recovery were, of course, Danny S. And then guys started coming in like Ronnie Two Shoes and Father Pete and then George from Middletown and Gail and all these people. Back then, we were losing people from AIDS. You know, in the early 80s, people were just coming in, especially in the Northeast, where most of the people that were coming in were dope shooters. And they were dropping like flies. We were going to funerals like every month, every 2 months. Our friends were dying. There was no protease inhibitors. There was no drugs that would keep people alive like they have today. And it was a very sad time in NA, yet it was very exciting. And those people, the people that I've mentioned that passed away from AIDS, were powers of example to all of us. They stayed clean no matter what. They went into hospitals. Back then, the hospitals, they were on a special ward. You had to wear gloves to go in. I mean, it was like they treated them like lepers. And it wasn't pretty for us. And yet they taught us how to die with dignity. And it was a sad time, yet it was a wonderful time. People like Danny and like Juliet and like Jimmy really know how to carry the message and make things happen and make things grow. 1983, we got together and we talked about doing an East Coast convention. Actually, it was 83, and we started traveling. Went down to Lehigh University at the 4th East Coast, and we put a bid in. Peter L. Levington, who also passed away from heart disease, and Shelley from Baltimore. They started bidding again. They used to be like a bidding thing. Who got the next convention? And Peter and Shelley started, you know, making their pitch for the convention. And Connecticut got the bid. And we had our 5th East Coast convention. And Shelley got Peter. They ended up getting married. And, of course, Baltimore got the 6th East Coast convention. And NA just sort of took off after that. You know, the miracle began to happen. You know, that addict, no addict seeking recovery ever had to die again. So, I mean, I was more or less a bystander. I was there. I always showed up. I was at the group level. I never, my personality was such that I wasn't good in big area service meetings. I was the first treasurer for the Orange and Wall meeting. I wasn't the first, but right after I spent the money. I did. I remember I had about $171, and Danny said, okay, we got to turn that money in. You know, the guys are coming up from Pennsylvania. We're going to give them some. Said, Rob, you got the money, the $100? Yeah, sure, I got it. Man, I had to go scrounge for $171 to pay the treasurer. I gave it, and I raised my hand and said, I don't want to be a fucking treasurer again. Yeah, you take the money. But Narcotics Anonymous has saved my life. I was 30 years old when I got here. I'm 61 now. And I know I don't look it. It's been a road of love and just happiness most of the time. Unlike some people, my story is a little bit different. I haven't been able to. I fell victim to this disease a couple times after 15 years, and through God's grace and through many people in this room that surrounded me, I was able to come back and get clean again. And And I tell you, the love and the kindness that people have shown me, and they didn't care. They just wanted me to live and survive this disease another day. And today, my life is wonderful. I married a woman in this room, in these rooms, 25 years ago. Judith, many of you know her. She's the light of my life. I have a son, an NA son that's 23 years clean. I mean, 23 years old. He's clean, too. He don't use. It's unbelievable. I have a daughter that was 3 years old when I got clean. She's 32 now, 32. And they think I'm the best thing since sliced bread. And that's because of NA. You know, that's because of the values that I've learned here, how to be, you know, a good person, a good husband, a good friend, a loyal friend, and a faithful husband. And it was none of those things when I arrived here, but today I am. And once again, I'm gonna end it with a thank you to all of my friends and to you guys that sustain me on a daily basis. You know, I go to meetings on a regular basis. I'm active. We're having another East Coast convention here. All right. It's going to be the 15th East Coast, and we're all excited, and Elizabeth is chairing the convention, and I tell you, it's going to be a wonderful thing. I hope everybody shows up next June. Jimmy's on the advisory board, and we're going to try to get Juliet to come back from Arizona so she can, do whatever she does. But thanks. Thank you, everybody. I love you all.
Hi, my name is Juliet, and I'm an addict.
Thank you.
Hi, everybody. It's truly a blessing to be here and to be sitting with these guys. A little awkward being in this couch. It's like the old days in the meeting. I was going to talk, you know, Rob covered a lot of, you know, what it was like coming in. People just loved you until you could love yourself. And when I came in, there weren't too many women. And I got one of the only NA women. There were two NA women, and I got one of them, and she ended up firing me. She said I was too sick. And I didn't use. She just said my behavior was too sick. And so when I came in, there were 7 meetings in the state of Connecticut, and 2 were H&I. So if you wanted to recover in Narcotics Anonymous, you got in a car, and you had to travel. And that's where it began. Your meeting started from the moment the phone call started. You know, where are we meeting? Who's driving? You know, who's got a car that's running? You know, we all had Just for Today cars. You know, we hoped it would just work just for today. You know? And, you know, I can tell you that the reason I have the friends I have today that have loved me unconditionally is because they took the time to come and get me. They would call me up and say, "You're going to a meeting tonight." And no wasn't an acceptable answer to them. They would show up at the door. And, you know, there not being any women in Narcotics Anonymous, when I came in, you know, that worked for me. And
worked for us, too.
So, sometimes it gets real awkward being around here in the old timer. They remind you of things you just don't want to remember what you did. and so what these guys did was basically they found a step and fetcher. You know, Juliet will do it. And I didn't, you know, I came in, I was going to get thrown out of my apartment. My husband was in jail. You know, I had no money. The phone was getting turned off. I mean, you name it. You know, I just wasn't in a good place. And they used to argue with each other who had to come pick me up. And, you know, I came in January. It was freezing cold. See, in Arizona, everybody gets clean in the summertime. And here, everybody gets clean in the wintertime. And, you know, it was freezing cold and, you know, Danny, who we talk about, met my brother Kermit. That's in the fellowship. I'm sure nobody knows him. and met him at the First Virginia Convention and gave, you know, Kermit my dossier, you know, and then Danny called me, and they were off and running. You know, I was like the project. And it was always Juliet'll do it. And what they did was they kept me busy. And when, you know, I would have 90 days clean, and Danny would take me to do a presentation at a jail. You know, I mean, I was still sweating to death, you know, I mean, and Danny would go, no, we're driving up to New London and do a presentation, or we'd go up to an NA meeting, you know, in Rhode Island to tell them that they weren't doing it right, you know. And all I knew what to do was say yes. That's what they told me to do, was say yes, you know, and they said, if you want to stay clean, just say yes. And from that point, you know, they dragged me in. Then they could, you know, we didn't have a whole lot of clean time. If you had a year, you were like God. You know, you were it. If you had a year clean, and if you had 2 years like Danny, you were just, you know, you walked on water. And so what we had to do was the recovery text came out. When we got hold of it, it was at that fourth East Coast convention. And that's when our fellowship started to grow, and especially in Connecticut, was when we got that recovery text. And we were off and running with that, and we were having dances and fundraisers, and we were getting the literature in, you know, to the few meetings we had. And then we discovered that, you know, we didn't have to pay for it. The prisons had money. And I got heavily involved in H&I, and especially in the women's prisons. And I never went to prison, but I felt comfortable. And I knew that they were never going to hear the message of Narcotics Anonymous if we didn't carry it in there. And I felt at home. And sometimes I would drive up all the way up to Nyanic, and I'd have one girl. Sometimes I'd go up there and I'd have 20 girls. And, you know, I get on the phone and piss and moan the whole hour home, you know. But it always, you know, I'd leave pissed off, come home pissed off, but I'd stay clean, you know. And it was hard getting other people involved. And so we started devising ways. And we came up with, we'll do a speaker list. And we'll go to all the meetings and we'll get people to sign up and have a big, massive speaker list that anybody chairing an H&I meeting, you know, could just go down and call, and they would get a speaker. I mean, we just thought we invented the wheel. You know, and we started doing everything was always, what can we do to make Narcotics Anonymous grow? And when, you know, we remember when Danny said we were going to go and get this East Coast Convention, he said, our fellowship will double if we do this East Coast Convention. And the fellowship exploded. Meetings started happening. The week after that convention, meetings started, you know, just popping up everywhere. So we found out things that were going to help our area grow. And, you know, we were, our region was Boston, New York, Philadelphia, you know, not Philly, I mean Pennsylvania. You know, you drove 5 hours for a regional meeting. It all depended on who was hosting it and stuff. But we went and supported. We'd all get in the car and we'd go up, you know, to Massachusetts and support their conventions. And we'd grab the newcomers and we'd pile them into the cars and we'd take them with us. And we had the information available at meetings. And when announcement time came, you know, we always announced, if you don't have money, you know, we kind of explained to the newcomer things. And I just, you know, when I moved to Arizona, the first thing I did was look for an H&I. And I got involved in Arizona and doing H&I, the Women's Federal Prison there. And yeah, it ended up, you know, I kept doing it. Nobody else stepped up, and it doesn't make a difference. You know, it was just like 10 years at Nyanic. And I learned to step down from things, because if I didn't step down, nobody was going to step up and do it. You know, and that's been hard. These people here have loved me unconditionally from the day I walked in these rooms. From the moment I walked in these rooms, they loved me. They remembered my name. If I didn't show up to a meeting, the phone just went off the hook, you know. And we didn't have cell phones, you know. These guys just were getting beepers at that point. You know, there was no cell phones. And, you know, to this day, I'm so blessed to have gotten clean where I got clean. Because at the end of the day, what it came down to was somebody always picked up the phone and called me. And we got involved and we did things together. And we grabbed newcomers. And we took them with us and we paid for their package. You know, we'd go to convention. You know, and we'd all put our money together so we could take one of the newcomers to a convention with us. And, you know, that's how we did it. And, you know, that's how it still is to this day. It hasn't stopped. A year and a half ago, my 19-year-old son overdosed and died. And who loved me the most and who still is calling me. That phone didn't stop ringing from the moment the people in Connecticut found out. And they understood that why I didn't call back, you know. But what it meant to me, you know, because they watched me come in. They watched this addict slither in these rooms. And, you know, I didn't go through treatment. I was sick as a dog in the rooms. You know, they watched me. And, they go, Juliet, did you get high today? And I'd be like, no. You know, I'd be so sick. And they watched me get married. And they watched me get pregnant. And they watched me have this beautiful son. And, you know, the only regret I have is that they didn't get to see him as a man, you know, to see that, you know, he did become an addict and he was going to Narcotics Anonymous meetings. And he was staying clean and he wanted to get high just one more time. And a year and a half ago, I found him on the bathroom floor and he just wanted to get high one more time. But my phone started ringing and it was Connecticut. It was all the people in Connecticut. Just loving me. I mean, people I hadn't talked to in 5 years that just picked up the phone and loved me through the phone. So, you know, I mean, even if you got a lot of time, you know, get back involved. I've decided, you know, I got involved with all the young people. They're all coming in the rooms in Arizona. And that's where I'm finding myself at home, is going, you know, to the young people's meeting and hanging out with them. You know, and offering them a place to come, you know, and they come up to my house for Halloween, you know, whatever you want to do. And that's what's saving me today, is the very thing that I was taught walking in these rooms. You know, is you can't keep it unless you give it away. And that's what's working for me today. Thanks.
Beautiful job. My name is Jimmy.
Amen.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, James.
Thank you for sharing, Rob and Juliet. I'm sorry for your loss and your sorrow. And I feel it. I, too, have a 19-year-old son. Because of Narcotics Anonymous, I'm able to be a good father to my son. And I know that I'm doing the best I can with him, and I know that he has choices, and if he chooses to use, I can't stop him. But I know by leading by example, I could show him there's another way. That's what happened to me in Narcotics Anonymous. I wish I had went first. They saved the youngest for last. Not biologically youngest. I'm the oldest. Thanks to Narcotics Anonymous, I'll be 63 next month. I got clean when I was 37. And I didn't think I was... Thanks, Rob.
Looks weeks younger.
That's my sponsor, Humble Rob. he's my sponsor because he sponsored my sponsor, who passed away this year. After 27 years in Narcotics Anonymous, at 79 years old, he had a good life, and he was okay with leaving. And I hope I could be as okay as he was and accepting of that. I learned a lot from him, and what I learned the most was about love and service. You know, two of the most important things in my life today. Service to Narcotics Anonymous, to society, to my family, to
to the God of my understanding that I found in these rooms, and the love that I get from doing that. And I never would have imagined that would come about when I first got clean. That was the furthest thing from my mind. You know, I didn't get clean because I wanted to. I didn't come to NA because I volunteered. I was forced. I was stopped. And then I was introduced to this fellowship through an H&I panel. You know, a bunch of guys that came into the facility and said, you never have to use again. You never have to be alone again. And I wasn't even listening. But something happened. Something touched me. And it was, you know, the predecessors, the people that were here before me who laid the path down. You know, I was fortunate. In 1985, there was NA, and it was strong, and I didn't have to go anywhere else. I came right to NA. My first day out of the treatment center, I went right to the straight-ahead group. And I was terrified. There was 200 people there. Unbelievable. And I went right to the back. Because I didn't want to be touched. I didn't want to be hugged. I didn't want to be part of this. But they kept on telling me to keep coming back, and I did. And then finally I got it. I understood what it was all about. You know, I want to thank this committee for putting on this event. This is magnificent. That guy was instrumental back there, walking in the back. Tim.
Timmy.
He's an NA soldier. He knows how to rally the troops. He got all these guys together, and they worked hard for a long time to put this together. I have some personal experience with him. I sponsored a couple of guys on that committee, and I would hear some of the things that went on. Although I'm not going to talk about any of it. Anyways, it just happens. You know, in Narcotics Anonymous, stuff like this happens. Like, you know, like the people who shared last night, the addicts who sat up here and shared about the early days and the struggles and you know, what they had to go through to get this fellowship to be where it is today. You know, it's amazing that they were able to do that. I'm still amazed. I'm still amazed at this fellowship and how wonderful and beautiful and powerful it is. I'm still, after 25 years of being here. And I never get surprised. You know, I just expect Narcotics Anonymous to keep on doing what it does, because I've seen it grow. I came to Connecticut NA when it was, you know, transitioning from an area to a region. And like Juliet and Rob said, it was inspired by the Fifth East Coast in 1984 when they had that convention at Yale and they got pitchers and they were all together. They got on buses and all went, because it was like a family. Get on the family bus, you're going, whether you want to or not. You know, and when I came here in 85, they had just started a region of Connecticut. You know, they broke away from, they went to the Mid-Atlantic in 1982, and I understand today that that's what made the fellowship strong in Connecticut, was when they attached themselves to another region, to a part of the service structure. Because NA had meetings in Connecticut in 1974. In some of our literature, it talks about a meeting being in Waterbury in 1974. And lasting a whole year, and only two people showing up for the first 2 months. But by the end of the year, there was 80 addicts at the anniversary meeting. But they didn't have a service structure, so they folded after a while, and then meetings started in 76 and 77. And it wasn't until 1980 when the new generation, the New Haven meeting, started, and then Straight Ahead Group started in West Hartford. And then they decided that the only way for this to work was to become part of a service structure of Narcotics Anonymous, and they did. And then they realized that they could be their own region. They didn't have to be an area of another state. They could have their own region in Connecticut, and they forged forward. You know, I admire their determination to make this work. You know, and they formed the region in Connecticut in 1985, in March of 85, and then we started, areas started. You know, the Hartford area started in March of 1985, and I was part of the Hartford area. And it was a transition period, because prior to that, some of our service structure was serviced by the groups. Like the Straight Ahead group, which was my home group, used to service an H&I commitment, because back then H&I wasn't part of the service structure as we know it today. And so my home group elected people to go to that meeting. And in the early part, we didn't have any funding through contributions from the service structure. We had an H&I can, and we'd put it on the table, and people would come up and put change in it. And there was one of our predecessors, John Kay, who had a meeting in East Hartford, was his home group, the Clean Choice, and it was a big meeting, and he'd pass the can around, and if it came back and it was a little light, he'd pass it around again. He'd say, we need this money to buy literature to go into these facilities because we don't have a budget. And he was serious about it. He got most of the people cleared in the state of Connecticut. If you told him you wanted to be on H&I, he'd fill out your form for you and sign your name. When I finally got a copy of my form, I said, that's not my signature, and I realized John signed my name for me. But that's what they did that back then. They made sure that we did what we said we were going to do. We started to develop integrity, you know, in the prison systems. They started to believe in us. Some of the guys, like Tim and John, they had to take jobs for the state of Connecticut to get N.A. into the facility. And then once we got in the facility, they quit, went somewhere else. But when we became an area, we decided that, you know, we need to take care of, as an area service, we need to have our own H&I, we need to take care of meetings for the groups. And that's what the service structure is designed to do. It's for the areas to support the groups. And that's what we did. And we started the Greater Hartford Area H&I, and EJ, who was my sponsor, was the first H&I chair. At the time, Juliet was a regional chair. And the meeting was in Derby or some place that I didn't even know, Griffith Hospital or something. And EJ said, we got to go to region. And I never left Hartford because my disease wouldn't let me leave. You know, but in NA, I got to leave, got to go to places and associate with people that were just like me. You know, I was thinking, I set my alarm this morning for 7 o'clock, and about an hour before that, I woke up thinking about what I was going to talk about. And I hate that. I hate, because I come up with the most profound stuff in my shower and when I'm laying there. And I'm saying, geez, I should get up and write this down. And I said, nah, it's too comfortable. But all I know is I have a passion for Narcotics Anonymous. I love this fellowship. I love the life it's given me. And like I said, I came here when Narcotics Anonymous was established. It was already in place. There was about 40 or 50 meetings when I came here. And I got involved with service because my sponsor told me. Like Juliet said, getting cars, you know, the Just for Today cars. My sponsor had a Volkswagen that had no heat. And he would always say, we got to go to Danbury Prison tonight. It's January. And I'd scrape the ice off the inside of the window so we could get there. And he'd drive. And we carried the message of Narcotics Anonymous. And we have 300 meetings in the state today, you know. And you know, with Rob and Juliet, when they came here, there was two or three. And that little poster that I found in an old box somewhere shows that there was 4 meetings in the state in 1981. You know, and one was in a hospital and became H&I meeting. But the other two are still going today. You know, the Straight Ahead Group and the New Generation meeting. So that tells you that we persevered. You know, we didn't stop. I wanted to talk about, you know, our fellowship as we know it today and how we've grown over the years. I've had and like Kay, when she introduced me, and it's a little uncomfortable when somebody gives like your resume for NA, and you know, I'm trying to be humble, and I just completed a trusted servant commitment of a regional delegate alternate, and I had the privilege of going to the World Service Conference and representing, you know, the state of Connecticut, and it was awesome. Like, beyond my wildest dreams, did I see how Narcotics Anonymous is a worldwide fellowship. And we are alive and well. And I was just blown away, you know, with just the passion that members of our fellowship from all over the world have about our fellowship. You know, and I feel that in my spirit, in my heart. You know, and I feel that when people share, you know, when people share, it no longer comes, you know, through my head. You know, it comes from my heart. And I, you know, when people even read, I thought it was only me. I thought there was something wrong with me. When I, at my first convention, they let me read one of our readings, and I started choking up. And of course, you know, I was a tough guy from Franklin Avenue back then. Thought I was a mob guy or something. So I'm, you know, like I had something in my throat. And I'm trying to cover up the fact that I'm emotional about our literature. And then over the years, I noticed that I'm not the only one. You know, there's a lot of us that are emotional about our literature because it touches us in our spirit where it was meant to be. You know? And it's amazing that just for today in our daily meditation came from We Do Recover. And we read We Do Recover. And it talked about fulfillment. You know, I was a misfit when I came to Narcotics Anonymous. I didn't fit anywhere. Not in my family, not in society, not anywhere. I came here, and they embraced me as a misfit. And I understood, you know, that this is where I fit in. This is my home. This is my family. So, when people talk bad about my family, I get upset.
That's right. So.
It just makes me more passionate, you know, to carry the message of Narcotics Anonymous. That's clear. You know, we have one fellowship, one message. We never have to use again. We never have to be alone again. We never have to die from this disease without finding a new way to live. You know, it guarantees us that in our readings, in our writings. It guarantees us the right to recover in our own way in this fellowship. Every one of us. And that's what I love about this fellowship. That a misfit like me could fit in. And not only fit in, but become a celebrity in this fellowship.
Humble Jim.
You go in all the prisons in Connecticut, and they know when I'm coming in. I go, they're waiting in the hallway for me. Here comes Jimmy C. Like I'm a rock star or something. Because that's what I do. I go into prisons all the time. All the time. I've always had a commitment in H&I because that's where my passion is. You know, I've served H&I for over 25 years, and it's a privilege to serve. I thank you, Narcotics Anonymous, for letting me go into them prisons. Because of you, I can come out of those prisons that same day. I'm more than happy to go in there. Anytime you want me to go into prison, you call me up. I'm going in, because you're letting me out that night. And I'm going home to my wife. And that's, you know, that's a privilege in Narcotics Anonymous, to be able to serve. And to be able to, and I understand today I never knew it in the beginning, by serving you build self-esteem. And the self-esteem came from when I went into those halfway houses and the guys were happy to see me. Like, I don't even know these guys. Jimmy C's here. Like, I'm somebody. And I didn't think I was anybody until they convinced me that I was somebody. And I know that today. You know, I'm a celebrity in Narcotics Anonymous. Just ask all those guys in the prison. Actually, they asked me a couple of months ago. They said, "Can you give this basic text to that convention?" That because they heard about it. They got in one of the prisons I go into. They started their own meeting 4 years ago, and it's on their own time. It's on Sunday morning. They pay their own way. They buy their own literature, and they had a basic text and they gave it to me. They said, "Can you have all those old timers sign this basic text for me?" And I said, "Yeah, I'll do that." And of course, in coming here, I forgot the basic text at home. But somebody's going to bring me one today, and I'm going to get all the old-timers to sign it for these guys in prison, because they think you guys are all celebrities. All you old-timers, they know you all. You know, the guys that were here up here last night, you know, the Vitos, the Bos, the Bobs, all the guys that, all our predecessors that made this fellowship what it is today through all the struggles. You know, those guys in prison know all about you guys. and they want to know more, and they can't wait to get out so they could come here and be with us, because that's where they belong, with us. And my wife will tell you that life's not fair, because if life was fair, I'd be locked up for life. And I'm not. I'm free. I'm a member of Narcotics Anonymous, and it's a privilege to serve. Thank you.
All right, thanks.